Professor Alan Garfield, thank you so much for joining us on the show this week. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to do it.
Let's start with a little overview here, and that is, in terms of context, getting on the Supreme Court's docket is no small thing, correct? I mean, many cases petition to be heard. Not that very many are.
You're absolutely right. It's very difficult to have a case accepted by the Supreme Court. It's easier to get into Harvard undergrad than it is to have your cert petition accepted by the court. So that suggests that there are reasons why this court thought this case in particular was worthy of their time.
And before we get to that, let's talk about the case as it stands right now and how we got to this point. Help us understand a little bit what's going on here. We have a Delaware lawyer, James Adams, who brought this case. He's a political independent who's arguing that the state constitution's judicial balance provision requiring that the state Supreme Court, Chancery Court, Superior Court be split almost evenly between the two major political parties essentially freezes him out from applying for judgeships. Legally speaking, what is he relying on to challenge this?
So he's relying on the First Amendment. And that could be confusing for the listeners because you think of the First Amendment as about freedom of speech, assembly. What does it have to do about this guy not being able to get a job because he's an independent? And the way it plays out like this is, one, you have a right of freedom of speech. Everybody acknowledges that. But the Supreme Court recognized long ago that it's not just good enough for an individual to have a right of free speech. Individuals could only be effective in changing policy and influencing the government if they can associate with other people to communicate their message, that they could form organizations, whether it's the National Rifle Association or the Sierra Club or the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. So the court has implied into the First Amendment and the right to speak, the right to associate and form organizations to communicate a message. So there's a right of association, but still the question is, what does that have to do with this guy not being able to get a job as a judge? Well, what happened in earlier cases is you would have situations where, and this is the original case, a Democrat is elected sheriff in Cook County. He comes into the job, and the first thing he says is, all right, everybody in the office who's a Republican, let me know, the process server, the bailiff, the secretary, you're all fired. I want to hire Democrats for all the job. This is just the classic historic patronage system. To the victor go the spoils. A new Democrat's elected, they kick out all the Republicans and appoint Democrats, or vice versa if a Republican is at the top of the office. Well, at one point, the Supreme Court said, no, if you fire the process server because they're a Republican, you are punishing them for associating with the Republican Party. You are interfering with their First Amendment rights to associate for purposes of communication with the other party, and that is unconstitutional. But at the same time, the court had to put a qualification on that because it realized that while it may not be appropriate for the new sheriff in town to fire the process server and the bailiff, that there are some kinds of government jobs for which party affiliation is relevant. The easiest example to imagine is when the new president is elected and he wants his own cabinet. You know, a president is entitled to have people in his cabinet who are party affiliated with his party, who believe in his agenda, and who are going to help him accomplish his purpose. So the court came up with a rule, and it basically said, for the kind of jobs for which party affiliation is relevant, you can fire someone if they're not a member of the right party. But for lower level jobs like the clerks and the secretaries and the janitors, you can't fire them because of they're not a member of the party you want. So the big question in this case is, where do judges fit into that? And some of the Supreme Court decisions say the test is whether or not they're involved in policymaking. And the Third Circuit said, no, no, no. Judges are not supposed to be making law. They just apply the law. And so they're not policymakers. They're going to be treated more like the process service and others because they're not policymakers. And so therefore, they don't fit in the exception. And it's unconstitutional to bar someone from being able to get this job because of their party affiliation or lack of affiliation, like in Mr. Adams' case. They also asked the question of whether or not, you know, with the cabinet, the president needs someone who's going to be loyal to the president and follow his or her agenda. But that's not true. When the governor of Delaware appoints a judge, the judge is not supposed to be, you know, making sure they're following the governor's wishes. They're supposed to be applying the law. So what the Third Circuit says is, no, judges are not the kind of people for whom political affiliation is relevant to their job and necessary to their job. Therefore, Delaware should not be barring people from applying for these jobs because of their party affiliation.
So let's turn it on its head. What is the state arguing? Why is the state saying these positions, these judgeships, they are policymakers, and we should have some ability to uphold this provision and make sure that there's this balance between Republicans and Democrats on the court at any given time?
Well, the trick here is there are not many earlier Supreme Court decisions on this topic, and there are some ambiguities in the law that the Supreme Court needs to resolve, which is one reason I think they took this case. First of all, on the issue of do judges make policy, it's true that Chief Justice Roberts likes to say judges are neutral umpire who just calls balls and strikes, but everybody knows that judges make law, particularly through the common law. The Delaware courts in particular, in the area of corporate law, for which they're dominant, most of the important principles of fiduciary duties of the business judgment rule are judge-made common law. And it's denying reality to say that judges are not policymakers and are not making law. Second of all, what the state is saying, what the government is saying is Adams is in the Third Circuit are misreading the cases. The issue is not whether after a person is in the job, they continue to have to show loyalty to the person who appointed them, which is what the Third Circuit said. The question is only at the time of the appointment, can political affiliation be a relevant consideration? And their argument is yes, there is an important value here, which is having a balanced court. It is proven to work extremely well because the Delaware courts are very highly regarded. And indeed, after the last couple of scorching battles for nominees to the United States Supreme Court, you might think those justices would wish the U.S. Constitution had the same system. So their argument is the jurisprudence allows at the time of appointment to consider political balance. And in fact, there are many federal agencies, the FEC, the FDIC, the FCC, the FTC, which require that the commissioners be balanced. And this could, if the court were to follow the Third Circuit, it could potentially disrupt all of those appointment processes.
Having said all that, one of the other things that the court did ask when it took up this case is that the two sides also look at standing in this case. What does that mean in this situation, and how relevant could it be in actually coming to a decision in this case?
So the issue of standing goes to which kind of cases are federal courts, including the United States Supreme Court, allowed to hear? And there's a notion that standing means the party who brought the case is the right person to have brought the case. And that requires that the person has been injured by the defendant and the court could redress the injury. One possible concern here might be that while Adams was independent, he didn't actually apply for one of these positions and was told, sorry, you're not eligible because you're not a member of the two major political parties. So that potentially could be an issue. If they decide he doesn't have standing, then they'll never reach the merits of the case. So that is a possibility. My guess is they probably will want to reach the merits of the case and they'll find he had standing. The Third Circuit found that he did have standing.
So in your mind, I mean, just to kind of recap for people, why do you feel the court found this case particularly interesting and worthy of its attention in this year's docket?
There's a couple of reasons why it may have wanted to take the case. One is there is a split among the federal circuits on this issue. And that's a classic reason why the court wants to take cases, because, you know, there's two different laws evolving in different parts of the country. It wants to set one uniform principle. Second of all, as I said earlier, there's some ambiguity in these earlier decisions on these rules, most of which were about more traditional kinds of patronage to the victor goes the spoil kind of cases. Judges are kind of a unique situation, and it might require the court to refine exactly what the rule means. Like, does it mean this is something for which the person on an ongoing basis, the appointee, needs to show loyalty, like a cabinet member to the president, or it could be a relevant consideration just at the time of appointment to try and have a balanced court.
There was one thing that the Third Circuit did do after its ruling. It did go back and revise its opinion to clarify that both parts of this requirement, the provision requiring judges belong to one of the two major political parties, and another limiting the party, a party to a bare majority of judges on a court, are unconstitutional. And you couldn't separate those two. I guess the question was, could you maybe dispense with one part of it, say it's okay to say you can limit the court, a party to having a bare majority one way or the other, but they don't need to be necessarily Republican or Democrat. Am I reading that right? Is that this is kind of a relatively significant thing?
This is the issue of severability. For the Supreme Court and the Superior Court and the Court of Chancery, there's two different provisions. One provision is saying that is limiting, the court to either a majority or just a bare majority or of one party. But the key thing is the other provision is they're saying, and the rest of the judges have to be from the other major party. That's not true for the family court, for instance, or the Court of Common Pleas. If they only had a cap on that one party can't be more than a majority of the court and left the rest of the seats available to anyone, then somebody like Mr. Adams could apply for that position, or a socialist party, or a green party. So if they only got rid of the remainder of seats have to be for the other party, then Mr. Adams' problem would be solved. But the court said, no. You know, in doing this provision, the framers intended for them to be combined. It's not only that one major party is the majority, but the other major party fills up the rest of the court. And that blocks out people like Mr. Adams. And because they said the intent was that both terms go together, if one falls, they both have to fall.
Could the court take that up and say that, no, they are severable, and you could solve this problem by saying, well, if Democrats have a bare majority, then you could have independents, Republicans, or anybody else fill out the remainder of the seats?
I mean, another one of the issues here is the sovereignty of states. And you might think that whether or not this is severable or not should be something that Delaware should be decided and maybe should be remanded back to see what Delaware thinks about the severability of these provisions. Because, you know, another one of the arguments that the Delaware government is making is, you know, we have a federal system. We've got the national government. We've got 50 state governments. And part of what that means is the state governments have autonomy to experiment, to try different ways of setting up their government. And Delaware's tried this experiment, which has been fabulously successful. And, you know, and the United States Supreme Court should not be interfering with that autonomy and not allowing Delaware to experiment like that. And I think that's a kind of argument that would be very appealing to a lot of the conservative justices in particular on the court. So I think there's a lot of ways in which the Delaware state argument might be something that appeals to the majority of the court, although you never know how the court's going to go.
I was going to say, having looked at all this and you know, what is your kind of sense of how this could play out, both in argument and in final ruling?
I think the irony of all of this, as I said earlier, is you'd think that the current Supreme Court justice would be hungering for the United States Supreme Court to have this same system, because the nominee process has become so terribly contentious. I think that there is a lot of sympathy for this autonomy issue. I think that they could be concerned about the impact if they rule against Delaware, for what it might say about all these federal commissions, which the Third Circuit distinguishes, but I'm not sure the way they distinguish actually works. So I'm inclined to think they might be inclined to support Delaware and allow Delaware to continue with the Delaware way. But we're going to have to wait and see.
Professor Garfield, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for your insight.
Thank you very much for inviting me.